I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. And does this ring a bell for you?
Can you hear? Am I sitting in a tin can? A last glimpse of the world. Planet Earth is blue, and there's nothing left to do.
Singing from experience there, astronaut Chris Hadfield, his new memoir, An Astronaut's Guide to Life on Earth, is out this week. Chris, great to have you on the program.
Thanks very much for the invitation. Nice to talk with you, and fun to play that song back on Earth.
It's great to hear you play it back on Earth. I mean, we all know your version of David Bowie's Space Oddity when you performed it from the International Space Station. And it got so much attention, even when the Soyuz craft that you returned to Earth in, you plopped down there in Kazakhstan. It's the first thing the ground crew talks to you about, right?
Plopped is an interesting choice of verb right there. We plopped. We crashed back to Earth. It's rude coming home. But yeah, as the Russian safety technician crawled inside and unstrapped me and dragged me out, the first thing he said to me was, Chris, your video to a clip will prekrasna, молодец, мальчик. You know, hey, I saw your video. It was great. Way to go, man. Really liked it. So what a way to come home.
Take us into space, if you would, Chris. What did it feel like the first time you walked out into nothing?
To be alone in the universe, kind of holding on with one hand, floating, weightless, you know, that is magic enough. But what really overwhelms everything is if you just glance up and to your right, the whole world is pouring by in this onslaught of visual explosion of beauty and texture. But what's weird about it is it's dead silent. It's like standing next to a raging fire or something with not any other sense except the visual of it. It's just surreal, the silent magnificence of the world. And you're just holding on with one hand. It's an incredible place to be.
That privilege to be out there. I mean, that's kind of what you were aiming for all your life by being an astronaut. But I guess being Canadian, that threw a couple of curveballs. So describe that moment at 9 years old. You're in Canada. You decide to become an astronaut. But you also know that it's going to be a possibly impossible mission.
You know, I watched Neil and Buzz walk onto the surface of the moon a July night, and I just thought they were the coolest guys ever, and thinking, I don't know how, but that's what I really want to do. And it, as you say, it wasn't just hard. Even if you're an American or a Soviet at the time where they had a program, imagine what it was like for everybody else in a country where they didn't have any astronaut program at all. It's like a impossible dream. But I figured it was impossible to walk on the moon this morning. So What the heck? I'm going to give it a try.
I mean, it's kind of crazy, but that's partially how the story went. I mean, you did everything you could training-wise, shy of astronaut training. And then one day in a Canadian newspaper, there's a classified ad that says, wanted astronauts?
Yeah, that's right. Just had to be a citizen, had to be able to pass a medical, and had to have a university degree. That's all they said.
Really?
And they stuck it in the papers. You know, it was pre-internet, like, you know, flicking through accountant, you know, manager, astronaut. It was all right there next to each other.
Earlier when we were talking about landing in Kazakhstan from this most recent mission, you wheeled out some pretty fluent Russian there. And I gather you were working in Russia at a place called the Yuri Gagarin Cosmonauts Training Center in Star City. What was it like living in Star City? Give us a picture of that place.
Star City is the historic place. It's where Yuri Gagarin and Valentina Tereshkova, some of the earliest cosmonauts, it's where they lived and worked and trained. It's like a small military base in the woods. On one side are a bunch of standard Soviet apartment blocks. On the other side, through another fence, are the training facilities. There's an enormous centrifuge that can pull 25G. There's a huge underwater training facility called, in English, the Hydro Lab. And there's space station simulators. And you live in the quarters. And every morning you walk through the green forest woods into the what they call the territory. You sit in classrooms. Your teacher, in Russian, of course, teaches you everything from orbital mechanics to control theory to how to use the toilet.
Wow.
It's quite the place to work, Star City. In Russian, it's a Svyozny Gorodok, which means like starry town.
What do you guys do for fun there?
We play guitar.
it's some good really musicians great, among the Russian crews?
Lots of Russian musicians. Lots of the NASA astronauts are musicians as well. I've been playing in the NASA astronaut band for the last 20 years. And
A NASA astronaut band? Wow. Say it
isn't
so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What kind
called
of music?
Max Q. Max Q. Bad music. We don't play all that well. But but mostly what you do in Star City really is study because it's complicated. And I was sort of like the pilot on my third flight. The first two flights I flew on the shuttle, but third one I was in the left seat, which made me like the pilot of the Soyuz, the Russian spaceship. And you fly it in Russian. And if the commander got like if he became sick while we were in orbit, I would have to fly the Soyuz back all by myself. So
was there like a training manual on the shelf in the Soyuz like there was in Gravity for Sandra Bullock?
Yeah, exactly.
Like just pull it out. Yeah. You do write so lyrically about the experience of being in space, of looking down at Earth and seeing the beauty of this planet. Do you think you understand something about planet Earth that few people except perhaps astronauts grasp? And how do you impart that feeling to people on Earth so we're all better caretakers of the planet?
I don't think I can claim that I understand it better. I've definitely seen it more clearly than just about anyone. You know, to see it showing you its different light and different seasons and different weather, and where I start to look forward to little coves and little islands and how the lights in Boston are going to look tonight, because Boston's got almost like a beautiful circular shape around the harbor there, and it's just so pretty. You start to look forward to the whole world like a familiar friend, but also you get a feel for the whole thing as one place. And if I have any understanding, I did my best to show other people that, and people responded, not because I was trying to sell them anything, but just because I was inviting them on board.
Well, I've got to say, we're really grateful to you for making space a lot less distant. So thanks so much for that. And you're going to take us out with another pass on the guitar and a song that you wrote with the Canadian band Bare Naked Ladies, with their lead Ed Robertson you wrote it with. It's called ISS, and that does not stand for International Space Station, does it?
That's right. ISS is somebody singing. And Ed insisted that we keep the words International Space Station in it, even though that's a really hard thing to rhyme. But it's in there in the middle of the song. And if you're ready, it goes something like this. You set?
We are set. Astronaut Chris Hadfield, thanks so much.
Here we go.
On solid fuel and wires, turn the key and light the fires. We're leaving Earth today. This rocket's burning bright. We'll soon be out of sight and orbiting in space.
I'm sure he's a great astronaut, but this is proof, if you needed it, that Chris Hadfield can really make music with the best of them. That's it for us today. From the Nan and Bill Harris Studios at WGBH in Boston, I'm Marco Werman. Have a great Halloween.
That ball of shiny blue houses everybody in.